Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign with crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
This is the February 25th edition of Commodity Week. The outside markets make for a wild ride in the commodities. We'll find out what's next today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
I am Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk with Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group. He's in Decatur, Illinois. Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. And Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing from Champaign, Illinois.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Let's start a program with this question. Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group. When you saw the market drop sharply this week, did it scare you very much?
I was probably a little shocked that it dropped as quickly as it did, but a lot of my cyclical work did indicate that we were due for a low here about Tuesday, Wednesday.
Pete Manhart?
Not really, because we had been straight up for such a long period of time, and if you look back into 08, we dropped corn over 60 cents three different times. Once in January, once in April, and once in May on the way to new highs. So breaking back 30-40 in corn and $1.30 in beans is something that happens when we're at these high levels before we can go back up.
And Bill Mayer.
Well, I think the beans bothered me more than the corn did on Tuesday because of the fact that they had broken some pretty severe moving averages a lot of people watch. But when you looked at the total volume, I guess it kind of, to me, looked like we had some good fund liquidation, but not just, you know, so heavy that we're going to see a lot of follow through.
Can you follow up on that just a bit on the break when we broke so hard? We talked a lot that day about fund liquidation and the money coming out of the marketplace, but on the other side, there always has to be a buyer. Who were the buyers on that day? Do we know?
I think that you had some new spec money coming in. Probably that was pretty minor. I think you had commercial buyers coming in more so the following day than we did. I mean, on Tuesday we locked down the limit. We didn't have any activity after a certain period of time. There are several things that came together on Tuesday that really kind of caused that, I think. And one of the things that wasn't talked about a lot was the fact that the options expired. A lot of people had long positions on with puts underneath them. And when those puts expired and the market then dropped on Tuesday, I think we saw some people go through some buy or some sell stops.
Pete, you shook your head knowingly on that Tuesday when the market dropped.
End users were buying a lot, especially ethanol guys. If you saw the reports later in the week, ethanol was at a record. You see record crush on ethanol, so end users could lock in profit by buying corn, and that was one of the big end users buying.
Did that give you hope that the market would come back, that the buyer was actually the commercial or the end user?
Well, again, on Tuesday we didn't have much, but it was the day after where we had the buying in there, and I think that people were waiting for a break so they could lock in things as an end user.
Dan, you talked a little bit up front about your cyclical work, and you kind of saw a low. Paul Cooley talks once in a while about a February low. I suppose some of those are related. What does your work show?
Well, I'm a big follower of seasonal tendencies when you combine them also with a lot of these cyclical patterns that commodities do follow from time to time. And one thing that's been quite noticeable is the corn market as well as soybean markets has probably been they're tracking a seasonal pattern fairly closely, but probably running 2 weeks ahead of schedule. And you can kind of go back to it's not uncommon to see a hard break in commodities during the first week of December. This year it came in middle November. The seasonal is not uncommon to see the market top out sometime around the first part of March and then kind of break during the first half of March. It appears that this break here came in this last week of February. So I think from that perspective, we're probably in pretty good shape technically now to try to do another leg to the upside. But I think technicians are going to want to see us move into new highs fairly early next week. And that'll solidify the technical picture that we're starting another 3 to 4 weeks to the upside.
We don't have but a couple of days left to trade in the month of February. Is there any damage that can really be done to the market on the monthly?
Well, I think today's or the Friday's rally dressed it up quite well. I mean, old crop corn was higher for the month even after the Monday-Tuesday or the Tuesday-Wednesday decline. New crop corn was behind for the month until Friday came and after Friday's rally now. So we're going to close both those commodities higher for the month. Beans, I think, may still be a little tipsy, but the recovery that we had on Friday is a strong indication that they're not ready to roll down either yet.
This program is being recorded at the Illinois Soybean Outreach Summit held at the I Hotel on Friday the 25th. Earlier in the day, Darrell Good was here. Darrell was really pretty positive, potentially, of new crop corn prices and said the disparity between the two, the old and the new, March and December, was wide enough that I think that gave him a good feeling about that marketplace over the coming months. Would you agree with him?
I agree with him on the corn tremendously because we still have demand, and we still have very tight supply. USDA's report of a couple weeks ago, and again this week, had the 92 million acres, but they had to carry out lower than expected of what they thought they would do. The other thing that helped push it down this week was all the outside market turmoil. Crude oil over 103 a barrel, but it dropped back to 95 after that one day, and that was worrying everybody about the economy of the world going backwards. And thus, we would never use another bushel of corn or beans. I think some of the push down also this week in the beans was the continued increase in the size of the Brazil crop.
Let's take up that outside market. So it was crude oil that really moved the marketplace to begin with. It was the problems in Libya and the idea that we might push crude oil very high. And then I believe somewhere during the week, and I didn't confirm this, but maybe you folks can tell me about this, the Saudis said, don't worry about it. We'll make sure that there's enough supply of crude oil in the marketplace. And the thought was that if crude goes high, we'll stifle the economy and we won't be able to use, right, all of the grains and oil seeds that we produce. Is that, relatively speaking, the way things happened?
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good summary, Todd. I think that just in simple language, I think the market got awfully nervous there when the Libyan thing got worse and the Iran had the ships going up the canal and all that was going on. But I want to go back to your question as far as Darrell Good's comments and that. Let's kind of back up a minute and see what happened here fundamentally from a market standpoint on corn. I mean, a week ago we had the USDA came out with, you know, overall acres going to be up, 8 million acres, something like that. And the market got nervous about that, I think, and had some sell-off. But then as they came out with their supply and demand tables today and this week, I mean, really what it's saying is, yeah, you know, if we have an increase in acres by that much and we have a trend yield, you know, we're still going to have a very, very tight supply. And I think, you know, we kind of got back to reality. Okay, we may get the acres out there planted this spring. Even if we do, we still have a lot of work to do to get carryouts up to a billion bushel or so.
Now, Glauber from the USDA, who is the chief economist there, Joe Glauber, that is, this week did say that he thought there'd be 9.8 million extra acres total of the eight primary crops in the United States. Is that really enough, Dan?
Well, I think you got to take a couple stages here. I mean, one of the reasons why old crop corn is substantially higher than new is there is still a general belief in the trade that we're going to have to cut 300 to 400 million bushels worth of demand out of the balance sheet. So that is where the main focus is near term. Now, if you take prices to the point where you do cut 300 to 400 million bushels of demand out of the balance sheet, then you're not necessarily going to need as big a crop for the 2011. So the users of cash corn are quite worried that based upon what they are seeing, cash corn is going to be awful scarce when you get into July, August, and then depending upon how quickly of a planting season gets started and how much new crop's going to be around, because 675 million bushels is not going to cut it. If we end up with that, that tells me that there's going to be a lot of ethanol plants shut down during the month of August. I think you have to, in order to keep everybody kind of operating, you're going to have that ending stocks closer to monthly usage, which is 1.1 billion bushels.
And so we talked about shutting down the ethanol plants earlier in the week on closing market report just a bit. Usually that happens in the month of August, but for a one-week period, you're talking about multiple weeks in the month of August because of the short supplies.
Well, the big report is going to be March 31st, and for those of us that remember 1996, remember that was just going into that report, the corn market was right up against $4. Nobody wanted to take it into new highs until they saw what that number was. And that stocks report reported in March of 96 showed that there was no rationing taking place, and therefore that is when the market blew right through $4 and went right on up to $5.60. To get the rationing done. So until the market sees what that March 31st number reveals, there's explosive that could actually send this market sharply higher as you get into that April, May to go ahead and finish rationing off those supplies. And, of course, spring weather is going to have a lot to say about that, too.
So the important things that happen at the end of the month of March are the quarterly grain stocks report, which we talked about and you just discussed, and then the acreage report, both released at that same time frame. What are the possibilities that it will show that we really haven't rationed? And maybe you can tell me who has. I think the beef folks probably have, but they did it over time, right? They've kind of put themselves in that position over the last year and a half where they shut their inventory down for quite some time.
Yeah, and let's also throw in there that March 31st period that we're going to be looking at forecasts for early planting during that period. So I think that's a very key period of time there. I guess I tend to think that we may have started the market had two jobs to do, one to get acres. Mm-hmm. We're going into the end of the month here. We're going to have $6. Right now we're averaging, looks like we're going to average $6 on the corn insurance. RP, and we're going to average about 13.50 to 60 somewhere in there on the beans. So that's going to go some ways to get the acreage I think that we need. The other job is to reduce usage, and I think we're starting to see some signs that maybe we start to do that. It's hard to tell in the soybeans because you typically see a shift to South America this time of the year. On the corn, though, I think you're seeing some analysts that are starting to raise their 2011-12 carryout numbers a little bit. Just asking the simple question, are we going to use more $7 corn than we use, you know, $5 corn?
Of course, this is the Soybean Outreach Summit edition of the Commodity Week program. We do have a live audience, and I've asked them for some questions. We have one on a card that they'd like to ask. As of today, they write, what level of my 2011 crop, both corn and beans, should be protected by forward cash sales or option positions? And the good news is they wrote the answers down and you get it back, but we'll let them answer as well. Dan Zwicker?
I've taken a position a long time ago that since last year was a total counter-seasonal move, basically starting from January down into the June low, and then when we normally make a June high, and then the market rallied into a November high when we normally make a seasonal low, that I was going to play a seasonal pattern at least into the first part of season, the growing planting season, and that's where I'm at. And until the market begins to show me that it is moving outside of that seasonal pattern, I'm going to take 1 week at a time.
I'm like to be 20% sold on corn when I got up to the $6 cash in this area for next year. And at the same time, we got rid of, if we didn't have it already gone, all of old crop at, I can't remember what we got, but in places it hit 7 in cash. On beans, I'm a little more worried about beans than I am corn because of the South American crop and because of China trying to slow their economy. I don't think that's going to involve food or bean meal because they're trying to double their hog population. So, but I would still like to be, when we've had those highs, I would like to be making sales. To me, it's hard to not sell $6 cash and get some on the books, and I would be 20 to 30% sold at that $6 level. On beans, again, I would be 20 to 30% protected and or cash sold. I've got some guys that sold half and then bought calls the last time we had lows, and they're looking really good.
And Bill Mayer.
I guess I'm on the high end here, but I think a guy should probably be in that 30 to 40% area, both corn and beans, maybe even a little bit higher than that on the soybeans. I look at it from a profitability standpoint. One of the things that we do as we do meetings through the winter here is to put together some profitability analysis. And when I look at those and I see that, you know, in a lot of cases it's $200 an acre more than we've ever been able to lock in at this time of the year before, I think it's just prudent to have some of that profitability locked in, not from the standpoint necessarily as to where the market's going to be, but from a standpoint of locking in profits.
Bill and Dan, both of your organizations deal with crop insurance in one form or another. Farmers will be making decisions starting next week about crop insurance. What should they do in that 15-day span that they have from March 1 to March 15 to decide?
Well, I look at it as part of your marketing plan. That's the way we approach it. And obviously, the most efficient way to get price protection in the market is through the crop insurance. So I think you have to look at it that way. You know, every individual is different as far as where they're at history-wise and all that. But I think you have to, if I'm looking at 5% difference in coverage on $6 corn, that's a 30 cents difference in my strike price, and you got to look at that compared to the market. And if I can raise my strike price by 30 cents, better in the market than I can on the crop insurance, that's the way I'd go. Otherwise, I'd go with the crop insurance.
Well, I was in crop insurance until 92 and then got into this business. And the crop insurance out there today, you can lock in profit. I would like to buy insurance that can lock my company profit in, and it's at very high levels. So I'm an advocate of crop insurance at the 85% level, and it's going to be more expensive this year because the crop prices are a third more. But, man, what a tool that you can lock in profit before you ever put a seed in the ground. So I'm an advocate of that. In those 15-D period, I don't know whether you buy puts to protect yourself or not. I don't know that I would. I think I would think that we will be okay down the road.
I agree. I mean, in today's environment, I think the crop insurance is a good product. But on the other hand, it doesn't substitute good marketing either.
No.
So you have to, if you're gonna buy crop insurance, I think you almost have to buy the fall option to go along with it, and then you can maybe leverage that crop insurance policy into a marketing plan as we go forward here over the next 60 days.
If you'd like, and be sure you visit this website, I'll take time to tell you about the FarmDoc team upstairs in Mumford Hall in the College of Aces. Visit their FarmDoc website at farmdoc.illinois.edu. That's the place you can use all the crop insurance calculators, and you can use iFarm there as well to see what the payments might look like and what the possibility of payments are on your own farm. It's at farmdoc.illinois.edu. Next Wednesday evening, Gary Schnitke, who helps put that website together, and I, along with Kurt Kimmel from Bates Commodities and Jackie Bakes and Paul Cooley from Stuart Peterson and ADM Investor Services, respectively, will be in, and I'll take time to say this, will be in Macon County at the Extension office there. That's on the Farm Progress Show site right next to the Great Big Windmill. So when you're coming in off of the interstate, you're looking at 48, which is the cross route, and then you look for the windmill. You can see the ADM lights from there, but they shine on that windmill, and you can come and see us. That's at 7 o'clock in the evening. Paul Merriman puts it together, tells me he's got room for 200. If you want to make the meeting, come next Wednesday evening, March the 2nd, to Macon County Extension at Route 48 and 74, roughly speaking, on the Farm Progress Show site. Okay, we've got another question from the audience here at the Outlook Summit. They ask, when and how do I protect 2012 prices? 2012 prices. Pete, you want to start?
2012 prices. I got to look and see what they were today. Corn closed at 519¾ for December. And November, I do not have. July of next year closed at 1310. Options don't work out that far because they take an arm and a leg. So you might look at some kind of a put spread or a call spread if you sell cash out that far, if your elevator will take it. But right now, with a possible explosion to the upside, I don't know that I would be looking at much 12 yet. I would be waiting until after that March 31st date on that.
Well, you don't have a lot of options because the option market really doesn't allow you to do anything economically. And I think a lot of your elevators are going to be reluctant to do very much. I think depending upon who you are, how good a customer you are, probably your elevator will allow you to do some maybe hedge to arrives or some cash forwards out there, but they're going to want a pretty good wide basis at that point. The other choice is to do it yourself with futures, and that could entail some pretty good capital at some point in time. My guess is if this market would happen to explode to the upside, the 12 probably would not go along very quickly. It would maybe only go up a third of the way as the front end stuff, so it'll be somewhat stable out there. But there would still be some upside capital risk at that point.
You would need a good banker, or maybe good two or three bankers, because of the margins. But back in 08, I had a guy sell out for 3 years when people were saying don't sell anything, and he had $7 and $6 sales that later on, when it dropped to $3, he bought them back and really was able to do very well.
Can you? I might just add, Todd, real quick. One thing I'm seeing with my clients is that there's a real variation as far as what you can do on the input side out in 2012. I've got some people who have had the ability to go out and lock in some what I think is pretty decent anhydrous prices and DAP prices out there. Seems like that's more in the northwestern part of the state. I guess I kind of agree with these guys. If you can't do that, I'm a little bit leery of getting too aggressive on sales. But if you can get some input side locked in and look at some $5 corn, for example, on the cash side, I don't see anything wrong with that program.
We have another question from, well, go on.
Your comment on that, though, is if we do blow through the top here in the next 6 months and we really see all-time new highs, I would be looking at locking in some of that for 12 at that time, but not right now.
That's because it would stimulate
futures or cash.
Because it's likely to stimulate so much production that we'll be overburdened at the end of it.
I don't think so. If we look at right now, we're going to supposedly buy USDA plant 4 million more acres of corn, and the carryout's going to go from 675 to what they say, 865. And that's still, and that's with a 161 or 62 average yield. So usage and demand are still what's leading us, and that's why USDA today and yesterday said several more years of good prices.
Talk about that March 31 acreage report. So I've got a question from the audience. They want you all to put your crystal ball on. What will it show for acres for corn and beans?
What was this? I didn't hear the first part of it. I'm deaf.
What are your predictions for the March 31 acreage report?
Based upon what I see right now, I think we're going to be talking somewhere around a 91 to 92 million acre planted corn number. Probably soybeans going to be somewhere around 77 to 78. Now, I am absolutely convinced after visiting with a lot of farmers from Kansas down at the Farm Machinery Show that wheat south of Interstate 70, unless it miraculously comes alive real quickly here, is going to be tore up and it's going to be planted to corn. So I think ultimately we're going to have a larger acre, but a lot of that's going to depend upon what Mother Nature does.
If that does happen, it'll happen early. We'll know it quickly, right?
We're going to know it probably in April, yes.
Right, and that'll be an early harvest, so if you're looking for your Vegas corn acres or your Vegas corn bushels, it would kind of cap that process, right? Old crop?
Well, old crop's still going to be another game. I mean,
it's really tight.
It's really worried about having enough cash corn to get by unless USDA happens to find some bushels. If these weather guys are correct that we're going to go into kind of a La Nina winter weather pattern into the spring, that does not bode well for an early planting, at least in the eastern corn belt.
I have another question from the audience here. Should we be locking in 2012 fertilizer prices now? And that probably is precipitated because they watched the price of anhydrous go up with the price of corn.
Well, I kind of alluded to that before. I think, yes, it, depending on what price level you can get, $7.50 or below, I guess I think that's probably not bad from an anhydrous standpoint. We did a little bit of research, and interestingly, we were trying to look at ways to hedge inputs through some trading strategy, and really the best correlation for anhydrous prices in recent years has been corn. So I guess if you own corn, that's your hedge against your anhydrous price.
If it's a reasonable price, I'd lock it in, definitely. If it's $1,200 instead of $750 or $8, no. On the acreage thing, we planted 88 million of corn last year. I'd say 91.5. When you're talking about wheat south of Interstate 70, that's where I grew up. There isn't much wheat there to start with. It was too dry, and of both Indiana and Illinois. So I don't see that many acres coming from double crop beans in Illinois and Indiana to start with. So I'm going to leave beans about where they were at 77.5. I think we planted 77.4 last year.
I think that's really important, what these guys just said here. Because, you know, I guess we're at 92.78, pretty much where the USDA said this morning. But I think it's really going to be important where those acres are. And I'm not sure that I see the acres in Illinois, for example, corn acres increasing. When I talk to seed dealers, I hear not a big increase in corn acres, actually probably a reduction in seed sales of corn.
Well, let's find out from our audience. How many of your farmers raise your hands? A good portion of our farmers. Okay, so how many of you are deviating from your normal rotation in the coming year? What do you think? 5% of them? Maybe?
Yeah.
Maybe 5%. And of you, how many are planting more corn acres? All of them. Okay.
Yeah.
So all 5% are going to more corn acres, but not many of them are deviating. But that might be enough to move them move the acreage dial.
I think we will get to 3.5 million more acres of corn. And what bothers me about that also is when I talked to our clearing company, Steve Freed, he said there's 3 million acres available in the Dakotas that we could plant. What kind of corn do they grow there? They don't grow Central Illinois corn. They grow not very good yield corn.
If you would look at the new crop, December corn and November soybean, corn-soybean ratio, it is trying to tell you that it needs bean acres, not corn acres. In order, at least in the past, in order to get the big swing from corn out of corn in, or out of beans into corn, you've got to get down to 2.1 to 1 and or 2 to 1, and we're not getting there. We're at 2, 3 to 1. Every maybe for one day or two, we're down to 2, 2 to 1. And even today, Friday here, you can see Dease corn closed up 19 cents, but November beans closed up 43. So they beans actually gained on corn today. And the market is still so. Either that market knows more, and usually it does, than everybody else is that it's already got its corn acres bought, and it's worried about not having enough bean acres.
And I think you got to throw the cotton in there with the bean acres, because I think that even is going to mean that we need more bean acres in the Midwest.
That's a reason not to worry about bean prices, because we had such a great fall. Unless you were so dry you couldn't put on anhydrous, most field work is done in the good Midwestern Corn Belt. So it's pretty well already been decided. So I don't see many acres being switched this spring, except where it was so dry they couldn't put anhydrous on. So I think the corn acres are already determined, like these five that are going to plant more corn here. And I think the bean acres aren't going to go up much, because we don't have much wheat in the Midwest that they're going to put. They're just not that much beans there, or wheat there to put beans after. And as we talked about in the South, if they tear that up, they'll go to corn.
There may be some issues on the ground that corn demand may not be as strong as what everybody's wanting to think it is.
On that note, that's this February 25th edition of Commodity Week. Give our panelists a nice round of applause, please. They include Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois, Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, and Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing from Champaign, Illinois. I'm Todd Gleason. This has been Commodity Week.